especially in the first interview with the school, you should try to be upbeat. You should sound happy. You should sound excited about going. And I think, you know, that's true for any interview, for any position anywhere in the world.
Hi there, this is Jason Creswell from Access South Korea Now. I'd like to thank you for joining us and listening in on this podcast. In this class, we'll be speaking with Brant Kim of English Teaching Opportunities, and we'll be covering a few topics such as the E2 visa, what kind of personality requirements we have for hiring people to teach in Korea, whether or not you need to speak Korean, the different levels of students you will have, what kind of curriculum you will be using, and the podcast is about 20 minutes long. Let's go ahead and have a listen and enjoy. Let's talk about the requirements as far as the E2 visa goes. We'll get that kind of taken care of and then move on from there. Would you want to address, Brant, what the main requirements are for that?
The main requirements for the E2 visa are you have to hold a citizenship from either the United States, Canada, the UK, which includes Ireland, Scotland, and England, New Zealand, Australia, or South Africa. The reason being are these are the main countries that speak English as the primary language, and you also have to have graduated from university from one of these countries and hold that diploma. When you submit your E2 visa, you will have to submit your original degree, sealed official transcripts from your university, and a copy of your passport to prove all of those things. The reason being is that Korea wants native speakers who are qualified to teach English in Korea. And I guess before, if you look at the history of teaching English in Korea, maybe 10, 20 years ago, it wasn't as big of a deal, but nowadays it is a very kind of technical thing. Immigration here does have kind of their list of, you know, what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. But if you are a citizen of one of these countries and you hold a degree from one of these countries, then it shouldn't be a problem for you to get an E2 visa.
And you brought up an interesting point about the diploma and the area or the university that you received the diploma from. We get often questions and applicants who say, you know, I'm Canadian, but I went to school and I graduated from university in France or something along that nature. And what's the decision on that, Brant?
The official ruling on that is you are not qualified if you graduate from a university where English isn't the primary language. Even if you graduate from a university in Canada, which is a French university, you will not be eligible for the visa. This is kind of a gray area at immigrations where, but the official ruling is that if you do graduate from a French language university, you are not qualified to teach English in Korea because you did not receive your college education in English. So that's kind of something that we've had problems with Quebec Canadians or Montreal Canadians, where they grew up kind of in a French background. So immigration pretty much says that, you know, then English isn't your primary language, it's not your main language, so you're not acceptable to teach English in Korea.
Exactly. So basically, the combination is having the passport from the right country and having the education in one of these countries and then having English be your native language. And that could be another thing. I mean, you could have somebody who came to the U.S. or Canada or wherever and maybe arrived there late but do have a Canadian passport and an American passport. They did graduate from a university in one of these countries, but if they have a heavy accent, what's the ruling on that?
Well, technically, if you For example, if you go, let's say your family immigrates to the U.S. or Canada or wherever, in your teens, and you get a citizenship and you graduate from university, technically you are eligible for an E2 visa, but a lot of schools or every school will pretty much interview you before offering the position officially. And if you have a heavy accent, it will make it more difficult to get hired through the school. If you do get hired, though, you will be covered under the E2 visa.
All right, so there the main obstacle is more its acceptance by the school as to the level of English that the person has. It's harder for that. It's harder for the immigration department to look at somebody's passport and to look at somebody's education and make a judgment as to whether or not they're a native speaker. But that comes down to more of the school is not going to obviously hire somebody who isn't proficient at English for obvious reasons. Exactly. Okay, so aside from the technical requirements, what would be some of the things that a school would be looking for in a candidate? What kind of personality qualities, what kind of attitude are they looking for when they're talking about hiring somebody to teach in Korea?
I think the biggest thing that they're looking for is someone who is very open, very upbeat, very positive outlook. A lot of the teaching that happens in Korea, this is English as a second language, so a lot of times there are going to be communication barriers with the students. The more active your personality, the easier it is to convey a lesson or to convey a meaning. And the school really looks at that. And also the foreign teacher, when they come to Korea, a lot of the schools will split the classes between a Korean and the foreign teacher. And the Korean teacher is more of the structured education type, whereas the foreign teacher is, they want to kind of make learning enjoyable, and schools kind of expect that from the foreign teacher. So, especially in the first interview with the school, you should try to be upbeat. You should sound happy. You should sound excited about going. And I think, that's true for any interview, for any position anywhere in the world, that if you sound excited about what you're, trying to interview for, then it will be a positive thing for everybody.
I would definitely agree that showing enthusiasm is pretty important. Like you said, these people are looking for somebody who's able to stand in front of the class and deliver an interesting lesson. And if the kids are not having a good time, if nobody's having a good time, then that's not a very good sign. So when you're having an interview with a school, you should be able to show them that you are somebody that would be easy to get along with, that would be enthusiastic, and somebody that you would want to work with, especially if you're deciding to hire somebody for a year. That's what the contract length is, for 1 year. So if you're deciding to bring somebody over to a new country for a year, you're going to have to make sure that this person is somebody who you really want to have in your working environment and who's going to kind of add to your working environment as opposed to taking away from them. What kind of situation would somebody typically be in, do you think, Brent, who would actually decide that this is something, like, where, at what point in their life would they be at to say that they're going to take advantage of this opportunity?
I think it varies. I think the majority of people who come are people who have recently graduated from university, and maybe they've started looking for a job and, they're having a hard time finding something that they want, or they're not really sure what they want. And coming to Korea is a great way to kind of have a little adventure in your life before you seriously enter, the workforce. And coming to Korea, I've noticed for a lot of teachers, they come to pay off their school loans. Mm-hmm. Korea is a place where you can come and you can easily save $500-$600 a month. Some teachers will save up to about $1,000 a month. And that all goes towards paying off school loans and whatever debts they accumulated during their college years. And you also see a lot of teachers who are kind of going through, you know, they've had a start in the business world and they want a change of pace, they want to try something differently. And it's a great way to just come, and it's only for a year initially. If you want to stay longer, you know, you can always stay longer, but it's a year to kind of explore yourself and find out what you really want out of life.
Mm-hmm. We received a good question via chat from the username Tabor Girl, and the question was, is it necessary, or how important is it to be able to speak Korean before or while you're teaching in Korea? Basically for myself, when I first came to Korea, I didn't have any knowledge of Korean, and I wasn't sure if this was going to help or hinder my experience, but my experience has been this. You can certainly get around in Korea without having any knowledge of Korean. You can get by in your day-to-day life. You can, you know, do what you need to do and not have too much difficulty. However, what I have noticed is that with any Korean that you do learn, it just adds to your experience and it adds to the enjoyment of your time in Korea. Really, it's almost like any new Korean that you do learn, you can kind of explore new things and you can meet new people. But as far as it being a necessity, it's far from being a necessity. You'll even see people who've been here for several years and who don't learn any Korean, but they're still having an enjoyable time. And in regards to actual job requirements, no schools are going to expect their foreign teachers to know how to speak Korean, so that's definitely not something that they're looking at as far as a requirement. My personal opinion is just that the more you know, then it'll just make your time more enjoyable. Have you had any experience with that, Brent, as far as, you know, needing to know Korean?
In Korea, I don't think you have to know Korean, but it does definitely make the experience a lot more enjoyable. Most teachers, usually in the first year, they'll try to pick up a little here and there without really getting serious into it. If they stay for longer periods of time, then I think it is a worthwhile investment just because of the environment you're in. It's more for your social life than it is for your work life, because at work, you won't need any Korean. All the communication that you'll be doing will pretty much be in English. But, you know, for those who come to Korea and want to learn Korean, it is a fairly easy language to start off in. I am Korean American, but I didn't really start picking up Korean until after I came to Korea. And, you know, teaching English and learning Korean, I've kind of noticed that starting off, learning Korean is much easier than learning English, as just the basics of the language go. So I think it's a worthwhile investment for yourself on a personal level, but it's definitely not a requirement.
In regards to learning Korean, as Stacy pointed out, if you go to the website asknow.ca, there is a page or a couple of pages that have some basic Korean lessons for you to get started on should you decide that you want to learn. Okay. Both of the students, what kind of students am I going to be teaching, and, you know, how good is their English, how good does my knowledge of grammar and sentence structure have to be, and that kind of thing. So Brent, what kind of different levels do we usually deal with?
For level-wise, you're going to see the entire gambit of English ability. You're going to see a lot of starter students who have never studied English before in their life, who will be starting from learning the ABCs, learning phonics, basic conversation. And on the high end, you're actually going to have students who attend international school or who have lived abroad who are fluent in English. And a lot of the schools in Korea will focus on students like that, where you're not really teaching English as much as you're teaching different subjects in English. So that's also something to think about, but on average, you're going to be looking at starter students, students who have been studying English maybe 2 or 3 years. So your average class will range from students who are learning things like reading comprehension, vocabulary, grammar, etc. And but grammar, I think a lot of the North American teachers, especially I grew up in the U.S., and my grammar is very weak, as in I can say something properly, but I can't explain why it's right. but I think it's not really expected for foreign teachers to be able to break that down. That is one of the main reasons why Korean teachers are at the schools also. Koreans tend to learn grammar quicker from Korean teachers, I've noticed, who really can understand the rules and who can really tell them, you know, this is why, this is this, and whatnot. And it really does depend on the level of students you're teaching. If you're teaching usually elementary level students, then grammar is very basic sentence structure, and you won't really be getting into anything very heavy duty that the average, you know, college graduate wouldn't know. Whereas if you're looking at older students like middle school and high school, they become more grammar and vocabulary based, but then in turn a lot of that will be taken by the Korean teacher and not the foreign teacher. The foreign teacher's main focus would be conversation, reading and writing, I think, from what I've seen. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to be able to necessarily have a deep understanding of grammar in order to be able to teach well. We have a related question coming from Rich, and his question is, what materials are generally supplied to aid in teaching, and how rigidly do you have to follow the textbooks? I'll address that a little bit, and then I'll let Brent follow up on that. In my experience, every school has some type of curriculum to follow, and it depends on the school and on their focus. Some are more conversation-based, some are more reading, writing, you know, listening and speaking, and they want to get you to touch on a little bit of everything. Some schools are very relaxed about their curriculum and will allow a lot of freedom from the teacher to have a certain level of input in that. And then some schools are a little bit more strict, where they have a very specific curriculum for you to follow, and they are hoping for you to kind of get a certain amount of pages done in a certain book, and that's pretty strict. But regardless of what kind of school you're at, there's always room for putting in your own personal touch and your own personal kind of teaching style. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter if you're doing something very specific and you have, you know, X amount of pages to cover in a book. It's always about you have your own way of delivering that, and there's always some flexibility in that way. And Brent, did you want to talk a little bit about what kind of materials that you are usually supplied?
Yes, usually the school will have a set curriculum with their own books, and the reason for being this is because every semester, at the end of the semester, the students will hopefully be able to move up to the next level. So within a set amount of time, the set course does need to be finished. Other materials, there are usually kind of teaching aids, I guess, flashcards and whatnot, tapes, CDs. The school will provide all of these things if you feel a need for them. Usually the course books will have additional material, which the school should have, and things like that. It's usually understandable if a teacher makes an extra request for certain supplies. The teacher themselves, when they show up to work, they can, you know, usually show up carrying nothing. The school will provide everything that they need for work. As for how to teach, that really is up to the teacher. And, you know, the more, I guess, you know, the better it is for the students. I think, you know, if you are given one unit, if you give one unit to 10 different teachers, you're going to see 10 different lessons. Some teachers are going to, you know, attack that subject in one direction, while different teachers will use different ways to view things and different ways to explain things. And I think, you know, as for teaching, I've never really kind of felt that I wasn't able to express myself when I was teaching. I would always take the material I had and I would try to, you know, explain it in a way that I enjoy, because it makes it easier for me and it actually makes it easier for the students to learn that way. If you just try to kind of do just the book itself, I think you're kind of missing out on a lot of what you can experience personally in Korea.
It's a lot has to do with the enjoyment, doesn't it? I mean, if you're not enjoying your own class, then there's a very good chance that the students in your class are not enjoying it either. So it kind of starts with you and with your attitude, and your level of enthusiasm will be what influences the students in your class. So if you want to take responsibility for that, then the first thing to do is to take responsibility of your own attitude in your class, and then that'll be reflected on the students, and they'll usually kind of follow whatever attitude that you have. Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you can see, we have many others that you can listen to. For more information on teaching in Korea or to apply, just visit www.asknow.ca. That's www.asknow.ca. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact us. Looking forward to seeing you in Korea.